I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, we still have a lot of questions about the local high school teacher who was detained by ICE. But there is one thing we know for sure that negates any argument he might have about staying in this country. Plus, a Seattle 911 dispatcher who was fired over not getting the COVID vaccine has now settled with the city of Seattle. She'll join us. Plus, the Washington State Supreme Court leaves criminal cases up to the whims of activist judges. That and much more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. And while you're there, make sure you check out our merch store. Again, that's undividedpod.com. Hello and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. There's a lot of attention nationally right now on the story that really kind of started to break right before we came on the air yesterday involving this Seattle area. I don't know if we call him a teacher. He was like the head of the theater, teaching the theater, I guess. Sure. But he was a employee at Kirkland High School called Juanita High School. So in Kirkland, Washington, east of Seattle, if you're not familiar. And I scooped him up last Friday and the lefty internet freaked out about it because that's what they do when ICE does anything in a state like Washington. And of course, they didn't, you know, get the pertinent details about why ICE was picking him up in the first place. So just a general resetting the stage on this. His name is Fernando Alves Roca. Again, he was a Lake Washington School District employee and gets picked up by ICE. Internet freaks out. Democrats say we're working to get him out. And then ICE comes out yesterday and says this 45-year-old is actually a citizen of Brazil who entered the U.S. in 2018 on a tourist visa and then just stayed here. And, oh, by the way, he's wanted by law enforcement authorities in Brazil for theft. So he's being detained by ICE pending removal proceedings. So that's sort of the extent of what we knew yesterday. And I'll be very honest with you. That's basically the extent of what we still know. I want to go through who we've reached out to try to get more information, because we were bombarded with really a lot of conflicting information about what happened in the 6 years after Roca came to the U.S. on a tourist visa up till he was detained by ICE. So he's detained. There is misinformation being pushed out there, I would say, by State Senator Monica Dingra, who couldn't really get her story straight. But basically, his attorney is now saying that after he came here on a tourist visa, he applied for asylum. I read two different interviews his attorney did yesterday, one with the Seattle Times, one with MyNorthwest.com. And in the Seattle Times interview, he said that Roca applied for asylum before his tourist visa expired. In the MyNorthwest interview, he seemed to suggest, at least it read that way to me, that Roca applied for asylum after his visa expired. To be honest, I don't care. The one thing we know for sure is that this guy in 2018 came into our country on a lie. He came into our country and misrepresented his intentions. There are a million ways you can apply for asylum. Coming here, claiming to be a tourist, and then deciding, wow, this is a nice place, I'm just going to stay, is not someone who should be able to stay. It's not someone who should be able to get asylum. And it's certainly not someone who should be able to very easily get a job at a local public school district teaching other people's kids and being around other people's kids. So I'll say that some of this matters, right? We've reached out to local enforcement removal operations. They were a little bit cagey about details, referred us to essentially Washington, D.C. So we've reached out to Washington, D.C. We want to know a few things. We want to know, did he apply for asylum? If so, when did he apply for asylum? Was it before his tourist visa expired or after his tourist visa expired? We want to know, if he came here under the pretense of being a tourist, why would he be given an opportunity to get asylum in this country? But if that's what happened, was he given a valid work permit? Because how else can we explain that he got hired by the school district? And Nicole, you could pull his picture back up. Was he given a valid work permit? Was he given a social security number? So all of those are questions we need answered about Fernando Alves Roca. to help us understand how someone who was wanted for theft in Brazil could come into the United States on a tourist visa, just decide to stay, and then, if you believe his attorney, get legal authorization to be here by having a valid pending asylum claim. Call me crazy, I don't think, even if he did have a valid pending asylum claim, that's someone who should have been able to teach around kids. How can you properly vet someone who, first of all, entered the United States under false pretenses, and he's here from another country without checking their criminal background in the other country? And we know there are rigorous background checks that have to be in place by state law for public school staff members and teachers. How can you rigorously check the background of someone who's from somewhere else? And we already know, again, he's wanted for theft in Brazil. Now, one of the things that enforcement and removal operations told us yesterday when we reached out is essentially one of the main reasons for them picking him up is that he's wanted in Brazil, in his home country, and he's not a citizen of the United States. And so this was someone who was considered more of a priority because Brazil wants him back so he can face charges there for theft, which his attorney says, oh, this was a surprise. All the family members, oh my gosh, he has a oh my gosh, this is so surprising to us. And everybody acts like, you know, this is like news to them. And I just have a hard time believing that because, again, the one fact here that matters, as we try to sort out all the other details, the one fact that no one is contesting, not his attorney, not him, not ICE, not anybody else, is that he came here under a tourist visa and never left. He came here under false pretenses, totally in anticipating. You don't just go to another country for tourism and then decide, oh, while I'm here, I'll seek asylum. So he lied to the United States government from the very beginning about what his intentions were. So we're working on the dates. We want to know the timeline. I would hope that there's some parents who aren't too loony lefty at the Juanita High School to also have some serious questions about how well are people being vetted who are working around our kids. And then, of course, you've got the media coverage of this. Nicole and I were at a baseball game last night with some political friends. And we're sitting there, and Nicole shows me her phone, and the Seattle Times news flash came out of her phone saying, Kirkland man arrested by ICE. Are they just trolling us at this point? Kirkland man? Kirkland man. No, he's Brazilian, and he's only been here for like 6 years, and he came on a tourist visa. When I go to Europe in the fall, if something happens to me, is the press there going to say, London woman? No, they're going to say American. It's so bizarre. Seattle Times has lost its mind. It's so bizarre. In what realm is he a Kirkland man? Crazy. But then you read their article, and again, it's the sob story mentality. Let's see. Juanita High School theater manager detained by ICE. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 paragraphs in it took them to say that he's a citizen of Brazil and is wanted in Brazil for theft. 7 paragraphs in to their story. Fernando Roca is the theater manager at Juanita High School in Kirkland and was an important member of the school's community. According to parents, one member of a parent Facebook group said Roca was an amazing mentor to her son. And then bury it down. Oh, and he's from Brazil and he's wanted for theft. Like, the Seattle Times has really lost its mind. Totally. And I think they're trolling us at this point. I think this much of myself. I think their social media team last night sending out the breaking news authorization was like, hey, Brandi Cruz will love this one. It's a Kirkland man. Crazy. So how can we have realistic conversations about this immigration issue when you've got an entity like the Seattle Times calling him a Kirkland man? I guess I shouldn't be surprised because they refer to women as men. So, you know. And then, of course, there was more sobbing in this. And I'm okay with talking about the personal impact of immigration policies. But when that's like the bulk of your story, when you're seemingly uninterested in really looking into the crazy, like nothing in this article about, hey, was this person properly vetted to be around children? Hey, did this person have the proper documentation to be working in the setting he was working in? No, it's like, oh, this is a sad story about a guy who was here and wanted asylum, allegedly, according to his attorney. And he's just a really good guy. And the whole community is stepping up to help him. It's talking about Adolfo Aleida, who is like a fellow musician sort of guy. Aleida found out Tuesday morning about the allegation of theft, saying, I was a little bit flabbergasted. The family said, oh, no, this is the attorney. Sorry. The family said it was outlandish. Oledo said for now he has to take the family at their word, but he would look into the allegations from Brazil. Rose Cano, a longtime actor and director in the Seattle theater scene, had hired Rocha to act in her upcoming show Pariah at the new Skid Row Theater, which is planned to open August 9th. But she said she feels panic for Rocha, his family, and her own loved ones. Cano is a naturalized citizen herself, so began to wonder, who in our family should carry some kind of documentation? I can't believe it's come to this in this country. I'm trying to see how I can help him. He is such a great, great, hardworking guy who came here under false pretenses from another country, is wanted there for theft, and therefore needs to be sent back. It's like, okay, I get it. Like, say a couple lines about the family and the impact of immigration policies, but you can't bury the lead that he came here on a tourist visa, stayed, and somehow managed to almost immediately get a job in a local school district working around other people's kids. How is that so hard? So we're looking into this. We have messages out to DHS, to Customs and Immigration Enforcement, trying to pin down a timeline. We also sent some additional questions to the Office of Superintendent of Public Instruction. We're trying to understand from their perspective, if we're a sanctuary state and we treat illegals just like we treat regular citizens, how are they truly vetting individuals who might be in the country illegally, or even if they are here on some temporary status, what are they doing to vet their criminal histories in other countries? Because if you're a citizen and you want to be a teacher, you go through a Washington State Patrol criminal background check, you go through an FBI criminal background check, you're not going to pop on either of those things for criminal convictions. If you're from Mexico, or if you're from Brazil, or whatever other country it is. So what are they doing? Are you really properly vetting the people who are working with kids? And that's very important, right? That's state law. So we have a lot of questions around this. And the media is not helping with anything. The media is not helping. You know, the media is making people far more angry about this situation than they need to. Everyone should understand the nuances of it, the ins and outs. Hey, yeah, maybe he ends up having an asylum claim. Should he have been given the opportunity to have an asylum claim when he came here under false pretenses? What precedent did that happen under? Was it in 2018 under Trump, or was it in 2020 or later under Biden? That stuff matters to me. So we're going to continue to try to get to the bottom of all of it. All right, quick, I want to talk about taxes, because this is something we warned everyone about, and now we're seeing it come to fruition. So short story, headline, if you live in King County, your taxes are going to get even higher. But I want to explain how we got to this point. So remember we talked about Governor Bob Ferguson's big campaign promise that he was going to get $100 million set aside to hire new cops. That was what he told us this was for. Remember that his dramatic political ad where he said 50th. Washington is 50th in the nation, last in the nation for number of police officers per capita. He had a very serious face. He said, as governor, I'll fix it. So he said he was going to get $100 million set aside to hire more law enforcement officers. And so this got pushed during the legislative session. And as we've talked about on this show, what was passed wasn't what he promised. What was passed was $100 million for law enforcement. But in order to be able to utilize it, local jurisdictions would have to pass new taxes. So that was contingent. So you can supplement the money you're getting. So contingent on passing new taxes on your citizens. And then also, the money could basically be used for anything. Not one cent of the $100 million, as you know, has to go to hiring actually new law enforcement officers. It could go to emergency response to like storms, anything they can characterize under the umbrella of public safety. It could go to unarmed community responders, which is something the left like talks about all the time. As if you have someone in the throes of a mental health crisis who's like threatening to stab people on the street, that you want someone going there who's unarmed, right? So the whole thing was a sham. Well, of course, King County is the first county to try to take advantage of this sham. And what is step number one? Remember, they've got to pass a new tax. So what do they do? Passed a new tax. Good God. King County Council approves safe and stable community sales tax to prevent devastating cuts to public safety. Today, the King County Council voted 8-1 to approve the Safe and Stable Community Sales Tax, a critical measure to protect public safety, preserve essential services, and stabilize King County's budget amid a projected $160 million deficit. The legislation, co-sponsored by Council Chair Girmay Zahalai and Budget Chair Rod Dembowski, establishes a 0.1% sales tax and use tax equal to 10 cents on a $100 purchase. All revenue generated will be directed exclusively to maintaining and strengthening King County's criminal justice, behavioral health, and public safety systems. The new tax will allow King County to prevent layoffs in the sheriff's office and the prosecuting attorney's office and the Department of Public Defense, sustain court operations and victim advocacy programs, support behavioral health services, including mental health and substance abuse treatment, invest in diversion, gun violence prevention, and domestic violence response efforts. So in case, you thought we were just guessing, no, they did tie this directly to what was House Bill 2015, which is the bill that created a $100 million fund for law enforcement. It says the vote allows the passage, or the vote follows, rather, the passage of House Bill 2015, which granted local governments the authority to adopt a public safety sales tax. King County became eligible to implement this tool after meeting all other required public safety and accountability standards, including crisis intervention and de-escalation training, transparent use of force reporting, other reform benchmarks to increase public trust in law enforcement. Because remember, those were also requirements. If you want this money, we talked about this at length, but for those who might have missed that episode, if you want this money, not only do you have to pass a new tax on your citizens to get it, but you also have to be policing in the way that progressives want you to police. So you have to have gone through all these like bias training, all this stuff, and done all the woke stuff that the Democrats and the legislature want you to do, and then you can get the money. So basically, like, King County can benefit from it. But if you're in a rural county that hasn't adopted some of these asinine things Democrats want you to adopt, well, you're not going to get a cent of it because you need to police in the way that they want you to police. So that's what's happening in King County. A couple of the statements, and this is important because, of course, Girmay Zahalai is running for King County executive. He said, today we took decisive action to avoid a public safety crisis. Oh, my God. Without this revenue, the consequences would have been severe and immediate. Rod Dombowski said, I'm grateful that the King County Council took decisive action today to protect our communities by authorizing this vital public safety funding measure. Before I get to what the lone no vote said, that is such bullshit from both of those men. Why do you think we're in a public safety crisis? Because of a lack of leadership, which you've contributed to, and because of the vilification of law enforcement, which you've also both contributed to. Why do you think we're having such a hard time? And then also, in terms of a budget crisis, you've both been on the King County Council. Rod, you've been on the council forever. You put us in a budget crisis. And for Girmay, who was totally anti-cop when it was in vogue in 2020, to say, oh, we're avoiding a public safety crisis. You helped create the crisis by vilifying law enforcement. See, what do? We talk about this all the time. They create a problem. And then they come to you with their hand out and ask you for money to fix it. Because it's all about just money and increased tax revenue to go to things that they want to go to. You think a dime of this is going to actually go to hiring more sheriff's deputies or to public safety in the sense that those of us with a brain think about public safety, like enforcing the law? No! This is going to go to like weird programs around DEI and it's not going to actually make King County more safe. They're going to take all this money from you, and I promise you, 5 years from now, King County will be worse off than it is now. But it's just, aren't you sick of like the people who vilify law enforcement, ruin public safety, and then come back and pass new taxes on you to fix the issue they just broke? So the lone no vote was Reagan Dunn, of course. He said, I oppose the new sales tax increase because it bypassed the voters, had no definitive spending plan, and was passed by the council without first looking for cuts or savings in King County's $20 billion biannual budget. I also expect that most of the money won't go to real criminal justice programs when all is said and done. And I believe him, and I think that that's exactly right. It'll go to like, I don't know, some gun-hating policies like, hey, let's spend $160 million rounding up people's guns or something dumb like that. I mean, these are people who won't even admit what's causing the public safety crisis, won't even admit what's causing the homeless crisis or the drug crisis, have had a hands-off approach to drugs, hands-off approach to homelessness, hands-off approach to gang violence and gun violence actually being perpetrated by criminals. They're laser-focused on law-abiding gun owners. And now they want us to believe that, oh, if we just give them $160 million more every year, that they'll fix it. No, they're going to make it worse. So a good reminder, if you have your ballot in front of you, if you live in King County, which I haven't filled out my ballot yet, but it is sitting on my counter, it's a good reminder why there's no good option in this race for King County executive. One of them is Girmay Zahalai. The other one is Claudia Balducci. Both of them voted for this sales tax increase. Both of them have been soft on crime. Both of them are a train wreck. I mean, this is just a horrible situation. I don't know if they're worse than Dow, because Dow just was a liar and a con man and made everything worse. So it might just be a lateral, But the option has to be Claudia Balducci. Because Girmayzah Halai, I mean, that's just straight socialism. So Claudia, probably be a push from Dow Constantine, but she voted for this thing too. But okay, if you got, you got to vote for someone. And Girmayzah is not an option, people. He's not an option. So suck it up. Take a shot of alcohol if you have to. Fill in the circle for Claudia Balducci. Just ridiculous. So this is what was going to happen. Democrats promising something. Oh, more cops. Watering it down. Bob Ferguson. You know, oh, this is such a win. Sneaking in there that, oh, you know, these counties can increase sales taxes without going to voters. So then King County gets to turn around and do it. Everybody gets to act like they're trying to support public safety, but it's all about padding their pockets, pushing progressive policies, and acting like they did something at the end of the day when they didn't. It's insane. As if taxes in King County need to be any higher. Moving sounds better and better by the day. Why am I living in King County? You're in Snohomish, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. I need to just move.
I mean, it's not a ton better, but it's better.
It's better. It's better. All right. Coming up next, we have a follow-up, a great follow-up on an interview we brought to you in December with a 911 dispatcher who was fired from the city of Seattle over the vaccine mandate. Happy to report she's now reached a settlement in her case. She's going to join us to discuss. First, if you are thinking about selling your home, maybe you want to move out of King County to somewhere where taxes are at least a little better, reach out to our friend Wes Jones at sellwithwes.com. Sellwithwes.com. Wes and his team are fantastic. I mean, Wes is a great communicator, and that's what I hear from everyone. He's always there when you need him through the home selling process. Which can be very, very stressful. And he's going to take all the heavy lifting off your plate. So let's say you need to make some cosmetic upgrades to your home. Wes can help with that. He can manage the contractors. You don't even have to pay for it until closing. So it takes that financial stress out of the equation. And then their team has just fantastic marketing. I mean, you look at how they put together their listings. They are getting more people in the door, more offers on the table. And that's, at the end of the day, what we all want when we go to sell our home. So sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com. It is simply a better way to sell your home. All right. So back in December, we introduced you to Marina Shindaruk. So Marina was a longtime 911 dispatcher for the city of Seattle. I mean, and she was, you know, had great reviews, celebrated for her work, got awards from the city, all of this. And she loved her job. Loved her job. And man, that's a tough job, being a 911 dispatcher. The mental sacrifices that you have to make to do that job are just, you know, unbelievable. So, of course, the COVID vaccine mandates come around in the city of Seattle in early fall of 2021. And for religious reasons, she didn't want to take it. So like many other dedicated public servants and public safety professionals, she ended up losing her job. And ever since 2021, in the 4 years since, she's embarked on this really long, expensive, arduous effort to hold the city of Seattle accountable for what it did. And when we talked to her in December, man, she was emotional. She had been through so much. She had to move like in with her mom out of state, separate from her kids for a little bit to try to make ends meet. And just, I mean, honestly, it was, she looked like she had been through the ringer. And in speaking to her in December, you know, I wasn't so sure that the city of Seattle was going to budge on this or if I could trust any sort of jury that might get the case in King County. But I am happy to report that Marina has now settled with the city of Seattle for a high six-figure settlement. We connected with her last night. She was nice enough to join us to talk about, you know, the settlement and also what she hopes comes of all of this. Marina, welcome back to Undivided.
Hi, nice to see you, Brandy. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I mean, look, you know, I don't think that there's anything that will undo what was done, but I think this is great news compared to the last time we spoke. I mean, that was a really emotional time for you gearing up for this case. So did you expect the city to settle?
That's kind of difficult to say. I would say the hope was that they would, because ultimately, even though my trial was scheduled for less than 2 months before the settlement occurred, the fact remains that most likely, even if I had a favorable outcome at trial, it would go to appeal. And then that would drag out for more years, probably, if at least a year, if not more. Mm-hmm. And then just too much unknown. So like, if I kind of weighed the total cost benefit, then definitely was more logical to settle.
Are you able to talk about the terms of the settlement?
Yes, there's nothing that I cannot speak about for sure.
So what did it entail? Was it simply monetary? Did they have to admit guilt or that they shouldn't have done it? So what was all involved?
Well, they didn't have to admit anything that was not part of the our request, myself and my lawyer. I feel like if it had been part of the settlement, it would have been an empty admission, if anything, because the fact that I had made so much attempts to get the issue resolved before even filing suit, it would not have been genuine. So I don't need a fake apology or agreement to change things, because it wouldn't have changed. But part of the settlement was for monetary compensation, economic damages, and part was slated for non-economic damages. And then, of course, reimbursement for attorney's fees, which was out of pocket for me hourly.
Yeah. What was the ultimate price tag?
The final amount was $875,000.
Is that enough? I mean, this has been a multi-year ordeal. Last time we talked to you, talked about having to, you know, upend your life, move across the country. I mean, so many things. Is $800,000 enough to compensate for everything that they took from you?
Unfortunately not. It's not even in the realm of close to enough, because considering what my salary was at the time I was terminated, and then if you look at what the salary for my position is currently, I would have in another 2 years, if not less, including overtime, and that's not even considering the benefits, I would have reached that amount. That would just been my income. Mm-hmm. So with everything else, like I don't have a pension anymore. It's highly unlikely, if not impossible, that I'll ever be able to get another position, another secure employment that I'll have a guaranteed pension for the rest of my life. If I retired, like I could have retired with the city after 30 years, which would have been 2038. So another 12 years, and I could have 13 years. I could have been happily retired and pulling a full pension. So to summarize, no, it's not even close enough, but for the peace of mind I have now, just to be done with and over with it, and then to be able to actually focus on maybe helping other people who are in the process, that definitely is worth it. That in itself is great.
Yeah, I mean, it should give them hope, right? I mean, to have the city of Seattle have to issue such a major payout over the COVID mandate. I mean, to me, it does feel like, and I don't know if this is your characterization, but a small bit of like justice and a small bit of... I guess, I don't know if it's an admission from them, but them having to pay a penalty for what they did.
I'm hoping that anyone who, like you just pointed out, that anyone who's still currently in this situation, who has a legal case in the process, or is perhaps looking to pursue a case sometime in the future, if someone can look in my case and say, oh my gosh, there's still hope for me, I'm going to do it. Or if they're ready to throw in the towel and give up, and just... if this gives them the little extra push to continue, then I'm so happy.
Yeah. Well, and I think it will have to. I think the city now's hand will be forced in having to settle cases, because there would be no difference, right? So I think that the city, if there's any cases left, there's a pretty good indication of what's going to happen with those cases. Do you think that it will change behavior? Do you think it'll stop the city of Seattle from instituting these kind of mandates again in the future?
That's hard to say. And I want to say that it would make sense, but that would also mean that I would have to, nothing about what happened made sense. So that's just to say something will change because this happened. I'm hopeful, but doubtful. Let's put it that way. And I'm usually a glass half full person, but with my experience, I doubt it. But even in my case though, we went through a very lengthy discovery process as well. So even if people's situations are a little bit different, but just the documents, the sheer volume of records which came out, which were very damaging information that was revealed about what went on behind the scenes when the city was saying one thing in writing, on paper, but then acting in a completely different manner and advising their leadership to go a completely different route. That there was never, it was obvious from the records, that there was no intent to accommodate anyone.
Yeah, they said it publicly. They put you guys all through this effort of asking for these accommodations and behind the scenes. I mean, we've seen the emails and the reporting on it. It was never an intention to grant any of these exemptions. Yeah. Let's end here. Looking back, everything you've been through in the last 4 years, personally, financially, all of that, if you knew what would come, would you, in hindsight, just have gotten the vaccine?
No, absolutely not. That was just one thing I actually have thought about, and that's just why I answered so quickly, because it is something I've considered. And this goes back to my initial feeling about it, or my initial sense of what I needed to do. I thought about it. I had a long time between the time when we found out when the vaccine mandate was announced on August 8th mm-hmm. or August 9th of 2021, and when we actually had the opportunity to submit an exemption request. It was over a month that passed in that interim. And during that time, I had a month to deeply consider it every single day and talk to my kids about it and think about try to consider every possible outcome that could happen. It's like, well, I could apply for it, but I could still get denied the exemption. And then what? Should I start planning now? And I was already starting to make plans in the background for every contingency because I didn't know what would happen. But when the declaration came out, and then, I mean, when the mayor in the declaration said that accommodations would be granted in the form of masking and testing. So when the exemption got approved, that was the time when it was like a huge sense of relief. Like, okay, that was a hurdle. If it was not approved, then it'd be another fight, but it was approved, so it's not a problem. And then, of course, find out it meant nothing. Yep. That approval was perfunctionary at best and no meaning. So,
yeah. Yeah. And I think I was with all of you thinking, well, no way they're going to do this. No way they're going to carry this out, especially, you know, when we need 911 operators and first responders and all the people who were losing mm-hmm. their jobs. So I think we were all just like, no way they're going to fire these people. It's crazy. Well, Marina, it's been a long ride since I first mm-hmm. met you in tears at an event in 2021, telling me your
yes.
story. You were very upset and you know, still upset, but I think that this helps a little bit. So full circle moment. Thank you for fighting this tooth and nail all the way to the
Absolutely.
End. And I do hope it helps other people.
Thank you, Brandy. I appreciate you having me.
Yeah, so happy for Marina. I wish the city of Seattle would come out and admit, hey, you know, we made a mistake on the vaccines. We're not going to do that again. But I wouldn't put it past them to pay out all these lawsuits and then to institute a vaccine mandate in the future, because they're just driven by ideology and nothing else. And, you know, they've completely destroyed public trust and their ability to respond to any sort of pandemic or health emergency in the future. When you can't admit, when presented with clear evidence, that what you did didn't make any sense, then why would anybody ever trust you again? So happy for Marina. She's been through a lot, and I'm hoping the other cases are resolved forthwith. All right, coming up next, there was a public safety bill in Olympia that didn't pass this last session. And it was one of the worst bills. We talked about it on the show all the time. And I thought, okay, good. It didn't pass. No big deal. Well, the far left has found a way to enact it without it being passed by the legislature. Not kidding. We'll discuss. First, I've encouraged you guys to take the First Mark Challenge, firstmarkinsurance.com. We have so many undivided viewers and listeners who are now members of the First Mark family, and that's because they offer exceptional service and they can help you save money on your insurance. We get stories like this all the time. Lisa says she talked to them about her business insurance. They ended up saving their small business nearly 50% a year, which is huge. Amy says that when she called First Mark and did the First Mark Challenge, they actually came back. She said they were super helpful, but they came back and said, your current insurance is great. Just keep your current insurance. She says, but we're glad we called them to confirm. Thanks for the recommendation. And the stories go on and on and on. So there really is no downside to it. Take the First Mark Challenge today. Schedule some time with them. They'll go over your current insurance. Talk to them about your insurance needs, maybe anything you have that's changing in your life. They'll go out, they'll shop their market of carriers, come back to you with their recommendations. Maybe they can save you money. Maybe they can get you better insurance. Or maybe they just pat you on the back, send you on your way and say, good job. You did a great job on your own. FirstMarkInsurance.com, FirstMarkInsurance.com. Did I mention you never pay them anything? Oh yeah, that's the best part. FirstMarkInsurance.com, the very best part is they work for you. All right, feeling feisty today, so I think we need a double dose of unbelievable. Okay, this past legislative session, we were laser focused on some of the bad pro-crime policies being pushed by Democrats. But there were two that stood out to us. And we talked about them even before the session began, trying to make sure that everyone knew what was happening so they could push back and they could testify. The two bills were HB 1125 and HB 1178. Neither of them made it across the finish line. Good news. But the worst, so the 1178 was on sentencing enhancements, where they were going to reduce some of the punishments for violent offenders because DEI, I don't know. So 1125, though, was horrifying. And I said over and over that this would give no finality to victims, give too much judicial discretion, essentially where you could go in and you could end prison sentences early in the interest of justice. So 1125 sought to give a tremendous amount of control over to judges, who already have a lot of control when it comes to criminal cases. But we've seen so many stories talking about activist judges giving exceptionally low sentences, exceptionally low bail. And the idea of those judges being able to, at the end of the day, let someone out of prison on their own whim because they don't believe the sentence was in the interest of justice was horrifying. And there were even a couple Democrats who spoke out about it and said, we just can't allow this. And what about victims? So somebody gets sent to prison and those victims and family members have to just for the rest of their lives wonder if some activist judge will just let their loved one's attacker out for no reason at all. So they didn't pass in Olympia. But that didn't stop these far left organizations from trying to get it done another way. They petitioned the Washington State Supreme Court. And as you know, the Washington State Supreme Court is very far to the left. And guess what the Washington State Supreme Court has done? They have agreed to change a rule of the courts that will give judges, including activist judges, the ability to just throw criminal cases out that they don't believe serve the interest of justice. So this new rule change was pushed by a bunch of far-left public defense groups, including the King and Snohomish County public defenders. And that isn't a surprise because we know they're ideologically just insane. It was the story was broken by our friend Jason Rantz. Wa Supreme Court quietly grants judges power to arbitrarily dismiss charges against criminals. The Washington High Court quietly approved a rule change that gives activist judges sweeping new authority to dismiss criminal charges, ignoring elected prosecutors and lawmakers who warned this will make their communities less safe. The change to Criminal Rule 8.3b allows judges to throw out prosecutions they personally decide are unjust based on vague and highly subjective factors like, quote, the impact of a dismissal on the safety or welfare of the community, the defendant being part of the community, or the impact of a dismissal or lack of dismissal upon the confidence of the public in the criminal justice system. It says all the defense has to do is claim, quote, arbitrary action or governmental misconduct that prejudiced the rights of their client. So this would give the ability, and this isn't even post-sentencing, really. This is like in the moment, the judge just decides, meh, I'm going to throw this out. I'm going to throw this out because the defendant is black and, you know, racism. Literally. Really for any reason at all. And it's not just conservative, right-wing talking heads who think this is insane. Jason had on his show State Representative Lauren Davis, a Democrat from Shoreline, who can't believe it. She told him, this can't be serious. This is really appalling. I didn't think it was actually going to be approved. She said, what will happen is this is a Democrat. What will happen is an activist judge will dismiss a case. There'll be some sort of catastrophic consequence, and then that will probably prompt an awakening or a response. But it gets a little tricky because the entity that decides whether or not a court rule overrides statute is the Supreme Court, the same people who approved this. So they would presumably just rule that their court rule gets to govern. She said, and they're continuing to try to take away jurisdiction of the legislative branch into the judicial branch. So basically, this couldn't get done, even in a Democrat-controlled legislature. So the far-left defenders associations took it to the Washington State Supreme Court and said, will you let us do this just through a rule change? And the Supreme Court said yes. So what Representative Lauren Davis is doing, let's say, you know, we go back and we try to fix this situation in the state legislature. So now you have a court rule that conflicts with a legislative fix. Who gets to decide which one stands? The Washington State Supreme Court. which just approved this fix in the first place, which sent out some memorandum a couple years ago on ending racism in the judicial system. This is nuts. So now, and this goes into effect September 1st of this year, all it takes is an activist judge. So if your loved one gets hurt, gets victimized, if you get victimized, and in the rare instance in this state where the suspect is actually apprehended and charged with a crime, and you have the unfortunate pleasure of having that case heard before an activist judge, of which there are many, all it takes is a defense to rule that, oh, yeah, this is racist. This is the result of racism or something like that. And that activist judge can just throw out the case and everybody moves on. Absolutely insane. Not getting enough attention in the media. The Supreme Court did this quietly. It's a huge, huge deal. It's a huge deal. And it's one of many things that will make our communities less safe. All right. Double dose of unbelievable coming your way. Okay. So a few mainstream news stories on the attack on independent journalist Cam Higby, which I said the day that Cam Higby's attacker, the guy who punched him repeatedly in the head outside the federal building during an anti-ICE demonstration, I was surprised when I went to court and that Como News was there. I was like, good for Como. If any of the TV stations were going to be there, it was Como News. And of course, the Antifa goon who assaulted Cam Higby just because Cam's presence as a conservative independent journalist is triggering to them, he now faces a felony charge. I'll have to see if he's still in jail. I looked yesterday and he still was. Can't come up with a buddy to give him $7,500. Bummer. So the Seattle Times has now covered this. And I will say there was some of it that was really good and some of it that was really bad. Let's start with the bad, shall we? It says the Seattle protester charged with a felony or Seattle protester charged with felony assault on conservative influencer. So just right there, they disparage him in the headline. You know what? I take it back. There's nothing good about this. I'm taking it back. There's nothing good about it. I was going to give them a nice little compliment, but I'm not anymore. Seattle protester charged with felony assault on conservative influencer. What are the two problems with this headline? Protester. Okay. You give up your right to be called a protester when you commit a felony assault. Okay. And then, oh, conservative influencer. And it's just meant to disparage and degrade Cam, who actually does some fantastic journalism on the ground. Look, you can call him a conservative journalist. I think that's fine. I don't think he would take any issue with that. But conservative influencer, give me a break. So it gets into the nuts and bolts, and a lot of the story was fine, where it's just talking about here's what the police say, here's what the charge is, all this stuff. But then there's this little nugget in there that really pissed me off. Again, it's meant to, because Cam's a conservative, it's meant to undermine him, to degrade him, and to, in this case, suggest that maybe he deserved it. Honest to God, Seattle Times writes, on social media, Higby has been accused of rage baiting people with opposing political views. In an interview, he said he doesn't go into protests looking for a fight, and he often goes undercover to blend in with the crowd. He said he decided to wear riot gear the night of the assault because he heard the protesters might throw projectiles, which they always do. But that sentence there. On social media, Higby has been accused of rage baiting people with opposing political views. What is the purpose of putting that, except to make a suggestion to the Seattle Times readership that Cam Higby somehow deserved this? And what I found interesting is they put a little link in there under rage baiting. You know what it brought me to? The depths of Reddit to some random post on Reddit saying guy who was rage baiting a few months ago got beat up in Seattle yesterday. And it has this picture on Reddit of Cam Higby peacefully holding a sign that said, we support mass deportation. So the Seattle Times is using like some dumpster Reddit post in their reporting to say on social media, Higby has been accused of rage baiting people with opposing political views. And look, is holding a sign that says we support mass deportation in Seattle probably going to enrage some leftists? 100%. But he's doing it peacefully. And if you can't control your fist just because someone has met you with an opposing political view, that's sort of a you problem, isn't it? I see crap in Seattle that enrages me a little bit all the time. Have I ever punched anyone in the face? Repeatedly? No, No, because I'm an adult and I have control over my emotions. And if I punch someone every time I saw something that I disagreed with politically, I would be in prison because I would be punching people left and right all the time. So it's just this like typical Seattle Times, like, oh, but it was an assault, but it was on a conservative. So let's throw a few things in there to sort of justify it, right? The thing I was going to compliment them on, because you know I hate being called right wing. I hate it because, like, look, am I right wing compared to the Seattle nut jobs? Sure, by all means. But whenever the media writes anything about me in Seattle, they call me right wing. And they do it to paint me as an extremist. And I take great umbrage with the assertion that I'm some sort of extremist in a place where they mutilate children in the name of radical gender ideology. Like, I'm not the extremist. You are, right? They didn't call me right wing in this. So they included this little line at the bottom, this paragraph that said, political podcaster Brandi Cruz reported on social media that a protester attacked her with wasp spray at an anti-immigration and customs enforcement protest in Tequila the same day. Police have not forwarded a case for charging decision, which they haven't found the suspects yet. Political podcaster, I'm fine with. That's great. Love that. That's nice. But here's the thing that pisses me off about this. Brandi Cruz reported on social media. No, I posted a video of it from beginning to end. It's not like my word versus them.
They've seen the video.
And they didn't even link to that video.
Of course.
They linked to some other random post.
Yeah, not to give you the credit.
Well, no. Or I mean, the views, they linked to some post about me specifically talking about one of the attackers. But it's like, no, it's not just me saying I was attacked. There's like a 5-minute unedited video of me being attacked. It happened. We filed a police report. So that just angers me. But political podcaster is better than right-wing provocateur, I suppose. But yeah, that whole Reddit thing about, oh, Cam Higby's a, you know, he's there instigating things. So it's okay to bash him in the skull until he gets a concussion. Seattle Times. You know what? I've decided, Nicole. I'm going to start a new segment. I'm going to make the graphic sometime in the next couple weeks. I'm lazy and have too much to do.
Okay.
It's going to be like, arguments for the Seattle Times going bankrupt. Or it's going to be like, on today's edition of the Seattle Times is trash.
Okay.
Okay?
Yep.
Because I think we could do a segment at least once a week on Absolutely. The Seattle Times is trash. And it'll have some like sad trombone music like, mm-hmm. It'll be great. So I'm going to work on that. Okay, coming up next in National, I've got to talk about this today. I kind of got buried in the Friday news cycle last week. Now it's sort of resurfacing. The director of National Intelligence, Tulsi Gabbard, suggesting that there may be potentially coming down the pipe criminal charges against individuals in the Obama administration, up to and including the former president himself, for pushing the Russia collusion hoax. I have a lot of thoughts on this. I'm sure you do too. It was also the subject of our daily subscriber show poll. So take it before we get to the segment. First, happening tomorrow, our friend Zach Abraham with Bulwark Capital is having his halftime live webinar. You can still totally sign up. It's free. Go to knowyourriskpodcast.com. And this is what it all is about. Look, we're at the halfway point in the year. So if your retirement portfolio was a sports team, how did it perform in the first half? Do you even know? Is your financial advisor making any halftime adjustments? Join Bulwark Capital, Zach Abraham, for his halftime webinar tomorrow, 3:30 p.m., where they're going to discuss global unrest affecting the market, perspectives on the outlook for the second half of 2025, plus a full reveal of how Bulwark is always looking for opportunities to lower risk, lower cost, give your retirement as much upside as possible. Hear directly from Zach Abraham as he shares insights in his free halftime webinar, again happening tomorrow, 3:30 p.m. Pacific time. Register for free right now, knowyourriskpodcast.com. And if you can't make the webinar, at least get a second opinion on your retirement portfolio, totally free. Schedule your Know Your Risk portfolio review at knowyourriskpodcast.com, because everyone should know their risk, especially when it comes to something as important as your retirement. Okay, a little bit of national news. I don't like this. I don't like it. I'm over it. I'm over, like, going back in time. I didn't like it when they did it to Trump. I just, like, where does it end, right? So now the Trump administration is talking about potentially bringing Barack Obama up on criminal charges over pushing the Russia collusion hoax as a way to get Donald Trump, to make sure Donald Trump didn't take office in 2016. So I have some cuts from Tulsi Gabbard, but she's basically saying that evidence directly points to Obama and Obama's DOJ, and they're going to decide whether there's any criminal implications, Tulsi explaining the case.
The report goes into great detail about the information that Russia and Putin had, which on Hillary Clinton, which included possible criminal acts, like secret meetings with multiple named U.S. religious organizations in which State Department officials offered, in exchange for supporting Secretary Clinton's campaign for the presidency, significant increases in financing from the State Department. They also had documents that showed the patronage of the State Department to State Department employees who would go and support Hillary Clinton's presidential campaign. There were high-level DNC emails that detailed evidence of Hillary's, quote, psycho-emotional problems, uncontrolled fits of anger, aggression, cheerfulness, and that then Secretary Clinton was allegedly on a daily regimen of heavy tranquilizers.
Oh my God.
Then CIA Director Brennan and the intelligence community mischaracterized intelligence and relied on dubious substandard sources to create a contrived false narrative that Putin developed a quote unquote clear preference for Trump.
Okay. Let's see. So she says she's referring the case to the DOJ for a criminal investigation and potential charges.
We have referred and will continue to refer all of these documents to the Department of Justice and the FBI to investigate the criminal implications of this.
For even
the evidence, correct. The evidence that we have found and that we have released directly point to President Obama leading the manufacturing of this intelligence assessment. There are multiple pieces of evidence and intelligence that confirm that fact.
Okay. And then she was asked about the T word, which is being thrown around quite a bit online right now, treason.
Based on what you now see, do you believe President Obama is guilty of treason?
I'm leaving the criminal charges to the Department of Justice. I am not an attorney, but as I've said previously, when you look at the intent behind creating a fake manufactured intelligence document that directly contradicts multiple assessments that were created by the intelligence community, the expressed intent and what followed afterward can only be described as a years-long coup and a treasonous conspiracy against the American people, our republic, and an attempt to undermine President Trump's administration.
I do love how she's like, asked about treason, and she's like, I'm going to leave that to the, but yes, it's a treasonous years-long coup that sought to undermine Trump. And then just for fun, CNN didn't like this press conference one bit.
Multiple intelligence community assessments released in the months leading up to the November 2016 election concluded that Russia had neither the intent nor capability to impact the outcome of the U.S. election. On December 5th...
We've been listening there to the Director of National Intelligence, Tulsi Gabbard, continuing on what has now been a multi-day effort, not only with public statements like this, but release of documents, to attempt to back up the quite extreme allegation that President Obama is guilty of treason and that he worked in some sort of conspiracy with Hillary Clinton, etc., in the assessment by the intelligence community at the time that Russia interfered in the 2016 election.
Yeah, we just thought it was funny. They were like, we're not going to listen to that anymore. Look, okay, I'm over it. I want when President Trump, and I know some of you are going to be mad at me for that, but I want when President Trump leaves office, I want him to be left alone. I want him to be left alone in peace. I don't want Democrats to continue to pursue, you know, all these bogus investigations into him. Now, could there be some validity to, I mean, the Russian collusion thing, I've come to believe that that was absolutely a hoax. Are we going to go back 10 years? So that would have been being perpetrated and cooked up in 2015, right? Are we going to go back 10 years? Are we really going to do that? Is that the best thing for the country? Is it a distraction? People are saying it's meant to distract from the whole Jeffrey Epstein thing, which I'm also annoyed with. Now, suddenly you've got the media. They came out, a Wall Street Journal story, and then there's a story out today. I think CNN was pushing exclusive. We've obtained photos from Donald Trump's wedding that shows how close him and Jeffrey Epstein were. So now suddenly they care about Jeffrey Epstein just because people are pointing the finger at Donald Trump. It's all quite exhausting, I have to say. And I just think that we have so many important things happening now, a limited amount of time under President Trump to get his agenda done, to try to fix what Democrats have broken in this country. I don't think that this is going to accomplish anything in that regard. I asked subscribers in our daily subscriber show poll on Patreon, Locals, and X, do you support or would you support potential criminal charges against former President Barack Obama as it pertains to what DNI director, well, I guess that's redundant, DNI Tulsi Gabbard said there. Nicole, yes or no?
I think no, but I am okay with exposing it. And if there were people that helped cover it up, I'm kind of with you, but I'm okay with exposing it because I do think that what we saw against Trump and this, you know, panic they had about Trump becoming president was unprecedented. I don't think that we had ever seen either party panic the way they panicked about Trump becoming president. And I do think that they went to extreme measures to prevent that. And because they got away with it, I think that they did it again with Biden and maybe went further. And then I think it became something they couldn't control the next time, or I don't know. But I do think that it's worth exposing, because I do think that it went too far.
Yeah, it needs to be exposed. And I think to the best that we can get to any sort of what is truth in America in 2025 and what does that look like? And a lot of people won't believe truths when they're staring them right in the face. But it does need to be exposed. I'm not against that. I just don't believe going 10 years back in the future, and then if you get Democrats in power, they're going to continue the obsession over Donald Trump. So I think truths need to be exposed, and I'm totally fine with that. But going down some road where you take Barack Obama, who, like it or not, a lot of Americans still love Barack Obama. And so is that going to really help you in 2028? And are you looking forward to those? You know, what's happening? 3 years is going to go by in a flash, and Trump's going to be out of office.
It has to be solid. It has to be 100% solid proof. Hey, here is this very solid proof that the law was broken, that this happened. It can't be, well, he implied this, he did. I don't know. I guess that's what it depends on, right? Yeah. There has to be something very clear and very solid, because again, like the auto pen, that's very clear, very solid,
obvious.
And it's still not working.
Yeah, and then you've got Biden's former people coming in pleading the fifth. It's like, well, you can only plead the fifth if what you say would implicate yourself in a crime. So that tells a lot. So you guys are pretty in favor of it. 75% saying you would support criminal charges. I get it. If you commit a crime, but at what point is it more destructive for the country than it is productive? I'm not saying don't look at it. I hate saying let the crime go, especially when it's something so serious, but it's just destroying our country, everything we've seen. Bob says, if it's true, then yes, as should Biden for Afghanistan. Unfortunately, politicians at times seem to live by different sets of rules than Joe Citizen. Mike says, I'd rather just move on and note that prosecuting Trump backfired on the Dems, as he's obviously president now. And that's the thing. Maybe Democrats will not do this in the future because they saw all of their efforts backfired. Russia hoax didn't work. All of their efforts to impeach and prosecute and kill him, that didn't work. Still president, still popular.
These 4 years were a better choice than the last 4 years. See, like, I think it was better to have him now than it would have been 4 years ago.
100%, so. Yeah. Christine, I chose yes, but only if he orchestrated or condoned it. If not, the responsible party should be prosecuted instead. Yeah, I don't believe this notion that presidents are responsible for every single thing that happens under them. And maybe he, you know, is there evidence directly that Obama said, yes, create this false narrative, use our intelligence agencies to do it, et cetera. Susan, I think he probably has immunity, so why waste the time and money involved? And that is the other issue, is Democrats complained about this ruling that Trump essentially has blanket immunity for anything conducted while in office. And so would that then apply to Obama? I guess it would have to. Kyle says, I vote absolutely yes, but Trump should pardon him. Dems would throw the book at any Republican. Republicans always seem to try to take the high road to keep things peaceful. Meanwhile, Democrats tear the country apart to stop someone they don't like. I agree. And I agree with the sentiment, because it has to end somewhere. It has to end somewhere. And so if they were to pursue some sort of avenue that did implicate Obama in criminal wrongdoing, Trump pardoning him, I think, would be the right thing to do, even though it's not getting even, right? It's Republicans taking the high road, but at some point somebody has to take the high road, or our country just continues to fall into the abyss. Is anyone capable of taking the high road? I have no idea.
Yeah, I really don't know.
All right, we'll get to some comments here and then our closing sanity check, which is hilarious. Cynthia Martin, good people don't lie or steal. I agree. Talking about this school employee, he lied to get into the country. No one. Now, all of a sudden, you were going to come here on vacation and, I have the need to claim asylum, so I'm going to do that now. It's just like, no, that just makes no sense. Matthew Cook, he's from Brazil. Asylum from what? The only person being politically prosecuted in Brazil is the last president, because he's a conservative. Todd, I was going to seek asylum during a cold winter in Seattle when I was on vacation in Cabo. Brr, yeah. It's like I'm in Cabo and I need to seek asylum from the insanity in Seattle. It's just not happening. Kathleen, I worked for the SSD as a school secretary. What is the SSD? Some sort Seattle School District. Yeah. As a school secretary and completed hiring paperwork for hourlies. I was required to photocopy a valid ID and a social security card or a valid worker's permit. So that's the question here. And there could be multiple parties to blame in all of this. If they did give him, you know, if he had a legitimate pending asylum claim and they gave him, first of all, if they did that, why would you do that if they came here under false pretenses? Wouldn't that negate the claim? And then why would you do that? Did they know about the theft thing from Brazil? Or was that a kind of new revelation? So that's all needs to be answered. And did you give him a work permit and a social security number despite the fact he came into the country on a tourist visa that he overstayed? And which president did that, if that's what happened? Was it done under Trump? Was it done under Biden? I need to know all these answers. And we've got emails out like crazy trying to get the pieces put together on this.
I also wonder, so she had to photocopy them. But then what? So did you...
Is it a fake ID? Is it a fake document?
How easy is it to present fake ones?
Yep, 100%. Or did they just, oh, no big deal. You know, we don't need it. There's so many questions to be answered. And I promise you, we're working very hard to put the pieces together. On the King County tax just passed, Jethro, come on, Brandy. We all know we can't hold our politicians accountable for their campaign promises. I'd like to meet one politician that gets into office and does what they say they're going to do. I mean,
Trump, why do you think we're waiting for the Redskins to change their name back?
That's true. Even his petty campaign promises. The only campaign promise he's not making good on, Jeffrey Epstein. So the client list, I'm pretty sure there was some mention of the client list by some in his orbit during the election. Let's see. Joshua Richter. This is not the Washington state I remember growing up. Makes me so angry. Yeah, it's really frustrating. On the Supreme Court giving judges ultimate discretion with how criminal cases proceed. I hope there are independent journalists that will attend these court hearings that will report on these judges' decisions. Yeah, because nobody in the mainstream media is going to talk about it. Hello, watermelon. And people still don't understand this goes on at a federal level, too, with judges doing whatever they want. Our judicial system is out of control. I'm sorry. There's way too much power to individual judges. It's supposed to be checks and balances. I agree in checks and balances. But I think that the balance tilts way too much towards judicial and not always for the better. H, time for mass emails and letters to the Washington Supreme Court. I actually have a case going before the Washington Supreme Court in the fall. You know, my public records lawsuit against the city of Seattle, the Washington State Supreme Court decided that this is taking way too long. It's been years.
It's insane how long this stuff takes.
They decided they want to hear our case, and they don't just want to do a written sort of arguments. They want to hear oral arguments. So we're very excited about that. Mm-hmm. So maybe I won't send them any nasty emails just yet.
Not yet.
hold off. If you do send them nasty emails, don't mention my name. On the COVID vaccine settlement, Kristen says they dug in their heels and legislation has passed to give them even more power in a health crisis like COVID. Yeah, and I really don't believe they've learned any lessons or they've been introspective at all about COVID and about their handling of it. And they still think what they did was just and they would do it again. I believe that 100%. And voters, you know, there's a lot of voters who would let them do it again. There are still voters who and people in the state of Washington who don't see any, you know, they're out there protesting, no kings, no kings, no kings. And they haven't said jack about Governor Inslee, 975 days of emergency rule, putting through vaccine mandates. I mean, they don't care. So they're perfectly fine with being lorded over as long as it's a politician of their political persuasion, which is just sad and ridiculous. Matthew with a $5 super chat, those who would give up essential liberty to purchase a little temporary safety deserve neither liberty nor safety. Ben Franklin. I love that quote. Let me see here. R says, come to Kitsap. I'll help you find a new studio space. Yeah, Kitsap's too far away from me. If I'm going, I'm going the other direction.
We're going
Kitsap's
way
crazy
east.
Too. But if you live in Kitsap, make sure that you vote for Michelle Caldeer for state senate, okay? Michelle Caldeer. We need to restore balance. John Thomas, $5 super chat. By the way, next time a crazy sprays your eyes, tilt to a side and wash out the lower eye. Otherwise, you keep washing contaminants into your eyes. Yeah, I had my security also had a paramedic background, so he was great. He was getting me in there. He was flushing it out. It was perfect. Cynthia, $5 super chat. We need to hold politicians accountable or this crap will never stop. They will never stop unless we hold them accountable. No more free passes. So I'm assuming that's talking about Obama. Let's end with Norman, shall we? Norman, Washington State is primed for a tax revolt. The totally ineffective actions that government has taken should all be eliminated, and the state should have a constitutional amendment to restrict the amount of money that state and local government steals from the populace. I wish, but never under Democratic rule. They will never pass anything that reduces taxes, reduces their ability to tax, or reduces the tax burden.
Period.
All right, Nicole, thank you so much. Yeah. And with that, we'll get to our closing sanity check. So, of course, the Democratic candidate for mayor in New York was a socialist. So let's just call him a socialist. His one of his genius ideas is city-funded grocery stores, city-owned and operated grocery stores, because the cost of food in New York is just too high. And so what they'll do is take money from all the hardworking people, use it to purchase food and to run a grocery store, and then artificially deflate the cost of food. And he thinks this is a great idea because apparently he's never heard of bread lines or how poorly this works out in other countries that do the same thing. But apparently we also don't have to look to other countries to learn that this is a bad idea. There is a city-funded grocery store that's a kind of a trial going on in Kansas City. And so the government comes in, it helps subsidize the cost of buying groceries. Well, there was a reporter who decided to go to this city-funded grocery store, and what she found is really not a surprise.
It's clear this Sunfresh at 31st and Prospect is struggling. This is the first section people see when they come in. There's barely any produce. A lot of the coolers and shelves around the store look the same way, empty. So shoppers have been asking us, if the store isn't closing, then where is all the food?
Around here, a good thing don't last too long.
A rotten smell comes through the door, and anywhere you turn, you'll see products that need to be restocked. No hot food or deli.
I watch people walk in and walk out.
The grocery store has received financial assistance from the city, but has been unable to keep those shelves stocked in an area that in the past has often been referred to as a food desert.
Government funded, really anything. Not a great idea. That has been your closing sanity check. That has been today's episode of Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving Common Sense a comeback. We sure do appreciate it. Sign up to support our show. It's how the show is possible. So if you like it, gotta go sign up. You can't wait for someone else to support the show. UndividedPod.com, UndividedPod.com. While you're there, click on shop and check out our merch store. So we got some good stuff up on the merch store right now. Okay, see you back here on the live show tomorrow at noon.